Hey, everybody. It's JL. Quick announcement. I just recorded the show, and it sort of messed up around the 1240 mark. There's just a jump of something malfunction, and there was like a jump of probably 20 seconds or so. So it just jumps there. Of course, it did it right in the middle of my discussing buying tickets to my third stand-up show. The first two sold out. So I guess this gives me a chance to tell you off the bat to look in the show notes for this, for the ticket link to my third stand-up show this week, which will be January 14th, Thursday at 9 p.m., so it doesn't conflict with any football. So I hope you can get tickets to that if you weren't able to get tickets to the first two or you weren't able to go to the first two. But there's just a weird jump, and I wasn't exactly sure what was cut off. I think it was like between like 10 and 30 seconds in the middle of that. So just reiterating that, so when it jumps around the 1240 mark or whatever, that's all that was. Rest of the episode, I think, is good to go. So enjoy. Thank you for listening. 5-star it on Apple Podcasts, blah, blah, blah. Bye. Enjoy. That's all.
You can't handle the truth. Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You are a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 12:01 p.m. Eastern on January 11th in the year of our Lord, 2021. Just finished up my tea and walnuts. So once again, we've made it to noon, living that good, healthy life. And I like to talk to you guys at the peak of my nutrition each week, first day of the week, declaring myself a new man. And right after this, I will probably go, drink a milkshake with a stack of pancakes, followed by a burger and fries, followed by a Talenti jar, followed by declarations to the righteous girlfriend that I'm going to start anew tomorrow. It's a real ground. You know what it is? Edge of Tomorrow, a top five, possibly even higher Tom Cruise film that they then tried to rebrand as Live, Die, Repeat. On DVD. Here's a movie recommendation for you guys for this week. Edge of Tomorrow. I think it could honestly make a claim as the best Tom Cruise movie ever. I don't think I'd have it there, but it's definitely in. What are my top three Tom Cruise movies? That's a good question, because I'm not really like an 80s Tom Cruise guy. I'm not one of these guys who's like, Top Gun was fucking awesome, bruh. You gotta understand. Light-skinned and Caucasian as I may come across, I was never in my life white enough to just be totally into Top Gun. although now, who knows? Now I'm into astronauts. I've gone right by Navy pilots, right into even whiter space astronauts. But so I was never, the 80s Tom Cruise stuff never like was like huge for me. I mean, Rain Man is a great movie. He was really good in Born on the 4th of July. But if I had to say my three favorite Tom Cruise movies, I think we can start with the ones I own. I think that's always a good measure. What is in the Blu-ray collection? Minority Report. One of those many movies that Steven Spielberg did that I don't think he gets enough credit for being like even the movies that aren't hailed as like his all-time classics are kick ass. Like the 2000s, damn, Steven Spielberg, like I own three movies of his, like beyond, like I own Jaws, I own Schindler, you know, I do own Schindler's List. Just, you know, when I need a pick me up, I just throw that in. And, but Jaws, Schindler's List, I own those. I own the Indiana Jones. But the one that the I own Munich, Minority Report, and War Horse. Three different movies that have always... I remember talking about War Horse on the first iteration of this podcast many years ago, probably when I first started the podcast. And I remember leaving War Horse and feeling really good about life. I had never seen the play, but I saw it. I saw it... I guess I was at 2011, but I saw it. I was in a shitty mood. I was like, I was basically at the low. I was about to a relationship I was in. I think it was about to end. It was just one of the more lower low points of a life filled with highs and lows. And I was just in a generally melancholy mood, just hating life, hating people. You know, much like me today, but you know, without money. So you can imagine how. In fact, look at it this way. That's when I started this podcast. So you can imagine how deep the despair was for me to be like, you know what, let me just talk into a mic and see what happens. But I remember leaving War Horse and being like, God, that was like life affirming. And I don't say that obviously about many movies or anything, but I just felt really good. I felt like the cheese that Spielberg sometimes does fit very well with that. I mean, I own Saving Private Ryan, of course. Sometimes I'll do a double feature before doing a podcast of Saving Private Ryan and Schindler's List. Saving Private Ryan, the single most powerful movie I've ever seen in the theaters. But I own Minority Report, War Horse, and Munich, and War Horse. So I leave War Horse. And I'm walking across, you know, I was like, you know what, I feel good. And I feel like my girlfriend at the time probably could see like a little glimpse of hope in me. And then a young woman walked into me while texting, which of course was a track on Too Big to Fail, wishing a communicable disease, a deadly disease on people who walk and text. Now it's just what we are. I've been trying to warn people. I am, when it comes to culture, guys, I am the scientist in the disaster movie who's been warning about what the fuck is going on. And my albums basically sound like a warning to society. I never thought of my comedy that way, but as you listen from really Diamond Maker on, once I became a broken man, you can really hear real prophecy in my comedy, a real John the Baptist of stand-up comedy. That's what I am. I would have to put of my Spielberg, my favorite Tom Cruise movies. That's where this whole thing started. My favorite Tom Cruise movies. I don't see how I couldn't have Edge of Tomorrow in the top three. It's that awesome. Tom Cruise is almost always, there it is. Another Tom Cruise movie I own. Here it is, folks. I've got it. Okay. This is it. I know they may not be your three favorite. They are my three favorite now that they come to mind. Mission Impossible 4, because it has the single greatest Tom, in a career of running, it has the single greatest Tom Cruise run. He is running from a sandstorm in a suit. And it's just as if the director said, just let Tom run, let him do it. He's earned it. Let him just run. And he ran with that classic upright Hollywood style. But I'm going to go Mission Impossible 4. I'll never forgive Mission Impossible 2 for being so bad that I can't have the like full collection of Mission Impossibles. I only own Mission Impossible 4. And I blame that entirely on Mission Impossible 2. Because it's just, I like John Woo. I'm a big fan of Face Off. I like his directorial style. But God, Mission Impossible 2 is such an aberration in an otherwise really strong and, you know, diverse sort of series. Like each movie has a different feel, has a different, but like they're all pretty good except 2, which is just horrible. And I was, you know, and at the time, I think even more than John Woo and Tom Cruise, I was excited by the Limp Bizkit version of the Mission Impossible song, which does rock. It's like the one Limp Bizkit song I can still listen to. I was a big Limp Bizkit fan in college. That's one of those, you know, some young people get caught up in QAnon and, you know, doing all sorts of nefarious things. Limp Bizkit was my QAnon. possible title, folks. And because we're getting old and senile, we're going to write that one down. Would you write that down for me, Sonny? Limp Bizkit is my QAnon. That's a good title. You know, nobody's going to listen, but it's still a good title. No, people are listening, just not nearly as many as should be. You know, come on, folks. I'm only racking up like 1/7 the listening for my own voice as I am for the Trump podcast. So anyway, but I'm grateful for all of it. But Tom Cruise movies, I'd say Edge of Tomorrow, Mission Impossible 4, and Minority Report. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there are any other Tom Cruise movies that I'm forgetting that would like clearly be in that class for me, but I don't think there are. I think those are my three favorite Tom Cruise movies. But I have a big announcement, folks, a big announcement, and I'm putting this podcast out early instead of it, you know, 3 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday. I'm going to put it out Monday afternoon, so you'll be able to listen to it. Many of you, I think, have already gotten tickets to my two of my Zoom shows. I have two Zoom shows this weekend. They both sold out, so thank you for that. You know, there's going to be disappointed people, I'm sure, who are going to go, I can't wait to hear more Trump impressions. And I'm like, ma'am, this is the funny dilemma I have with this. I'm going to do a little bit of Trump, and it's good warm-up for what's going to happen to me on the road if and ever comedy clubs ever open up again and if I have a career. But what happens that's very frustrating is I have literally put out since March. This is not an exaggeration, folks. This is an actual number. I have done 13 hours of Trump content. Trump and associates content, but obviously 93% of it has been Trump. Yeah, the McConnell has been getting a lot of buzz, but I have done 13 hours of free content in 9 months. And it's always weird when people go to a stand-up show that I'm trying to be like, it's a stand-up comedy show with JL. Yes, there, and I even say, yes, he'll do some voices, but it's mostly stand-up comedy because I don't want people to be disappointed, but they will be. And you know, about 10% of the comments of people buying tickets are like, can't wait to hear more Trump. I hope you do a lot of Pence. And I'm like, you've gotten quite a lot of that. Like, I'm an excellent stand-up comedian, and I've been dying to sort of work on some real new golden material. And I've been fortunate enough to do that in some corporate private shows, despite always one or two people going, when's he doing the voices? And I'm like, yeah, this... you know, the comedy ignorance will never not annoy me, even though I don't blame it. I don't consider it a moral failing, but I don't understand. Like, I've done so much Trump that it's like, don't you want to see something different? I don't know. But the point is, as people who listen to my podcast that isn't Trump-centric, I would love it if you... I'm going to put a ticket link for the third show, which is this Thursday. Doesn't conflict with basketball. Football, excuse me. It doesn't conflict with anything unless you have something going on Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. But Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, third show is on sale now, limited seats. So please, if you are the people who seem to like my thoughts on the world that extend beyond Donald Trump, so I hope I can rely on the Righteous Prick audience, those of you who have not gotten tickets or who couldn't go to the weekend shows Friday, Saturday, please go get tickets today for the third and final stand-up show. And then guess what? Next week, you'll be able to hear the highs and lows of all three shows. You know, this old woman went off camera and she unmuted herself and said, this is offensive. And at which point I said, you're right. Long shows from my living room, but I've got it set all up to look like a, you know, like I'm at a comedy club. So we've done good work. So ticket link in the what's it called? You know, in the show notes for this, and also on Twitter and whatnot. So thank you everybody for whatever. I don't know. Thanks. Thank you for being a friend, Golden Girls. So. We talked about Tom Cruise, of course, which I think every podcast should. And we've talked about my show. And here's another thing. Here's my comedy gripe of the week. And finally, guys, I've made a note to talk about my gambling addiction now that I'm back in the full swing of my DraftKings career. Or betonline.ag if you listen to Making Podcasts Great Again. But, I will talk about my gambling shortly. For anybody who's watched Uncut Gems or listened to this podcast in early 2020 before COVID, you will, I think, enjoy what I have to say. So for some reason, the audio, my old computer, this is, I don't know. There's occasional skips and jumps, but it's very frustrating. I have a brand new mic that works very well. And it's just, it's a real, Audacity is a real see you next Tuesday recording program. And it's okay, guys. You don't have to write to me with 9 recommendations for, I'm just griping. And if you know anything about me, sometimes I don't want solutions. Sometimes I just want a place where I can safely vent and speak my angry and hostile and irrational truth. So thank you. I now have, this is another thing. I have, I think, what may be the coolest merch in the history of merch now. I know most comedians end up being t-shirt salesmen, and I could never do that. And I don't begrudge people who need to make money. God knows I've complained and critiqued the economics of stand-up comedy for many, many years. But I just never want to sell a t-shirt. I'm selling one for the podcast, the Making Podcast Great Again, because that's more of a show. I view that as like selling a show t-shirt. But to me, as a stand-up comedian, my merch is my stand-up comedy. Plain and simple. So what I do have is, and I think they're very cool, and I've posted about them, and they're in the same link as the ticket link, but I got all 6 of my stand-up albums put onto 1 USB business card. They came out so well, and I'm so proud of them, and they're just very cool. And obviously, I sell them at a cheaper rate than what all 6 albums would cost. And they'll, you know, the main thing is to have them for the second half of the year when hopefully I'm headlining shows and can, you know, just instead of bringing a bag with CDs everywhere I go, I can bring literally like a stack of 30 cards in like a pouch of my backpack, and $40 a pop. On the road, which may sound like a lot, but it's, you know, you're getting 6 albums, 15 years of stand-up comedy albums from me, my entire catalog, at, you know, up until my next album, it's $70 if you buy them all on iTunes, so 40 is a pretty good deal. 50 now just for shipping and shit like that. But whatever, a lot of you have probably streamed or bought one or some or all of my albums. So I guess you're not necessarily the group I need to talk to as far as getting on board with that. But it's just been funny that I've sold one. And once again, this is mainly for merch for the road, where I'm likely to sell many of them, especially if I'm headlining. I usually sold really well with CDs, but a common problem that was running into me in 2018, the last year I did like substantial road work, was a lot of younger people saying, "Oh, I don't have a CD player," and so that's understandable. I know it makes me sound old, but I just had an inventory that I wanted to get rid of. So I figured a USB card. Everybody has a, you know, everybody that's coming to a comedy club probably has a computer, so. I figure this is an economical way to get people my whole catalog, and you know, then they can go review them on sites if they like them. But sold one so far. So I think this bodes well for how well these Zoom shows will be doing. I love your comedy. Could you do Trump for an hour? And I'm like, I could do Trump for, a year. I could talk like Trump for a year and grab women by the pussy and do all that. I could really go Daniel Day-Lewis with all of it. But he's a fat fucking tyrant. And I don't want to do that all the time. You know, it's a character. It's not my life. But we'll see. We'll see. I know I sound bitter. But it's just one of those things. I never thought in my lifetime, I've joked about it, but I never thought stand-up comedy really would become the jazz of comedic arts. You know, like, but instead of heroin, it's other people injecting my comedy career with heroin as it dies. I don't know, that analogy lost something. But the point is, I love stand-up comedy. I'm really good at it. And I hope that most people come along on that journey. But I know I'm going to lose some. It's going to be kind of funny. I just know I already know I'm going to lose some people with what is good stand-up comedy. They're just going to go, what is this? I don't like this. I thought he would do more voices. And it's like, once again, you know, I'm going to feel like that chick that's like, when are we going to make this an official relationship? And my audience is like, why can't we keep it casual with just the Trump impression? Why do you want to get all tied down with stand-up comedy and sharing your thoughts? I don't know why misogynist dude character for me always has to be a semi-literate Italian, but I guess that's just what comes to mind when I think of aggressive chauvinistic guy. Speaking of chauvinistic Italians, I just finished Sopranos season one on a rewatch. And I got to say, other than James Gandolfini, other than his play, that first season, not as great as I remember. And I part of that is because like some of the filming technique even feels like an old episode of Oz. Like there's some transition between sort of modern filmmaking and like 80s into 90s TV filmmaking. It just feels slightly archaic in terms of the style and direction of the show. Gandolfini is great, but other than that, I mean, I'm looking forward to keep on moving through the show. But I was like, after the first, I finished the first season last night, and I was just like, because that's what me and the righteous lady are watching together right now, and I was just like, I really thought this show was better when I first watched it. But you know, it's one of those, like, for instance, I think if and when I do a rewatch of The Wire or 6 Feet Under, which only came a few years after The Sopranos, like midway in The Sopranos run, both of those shows started. And I feel like both shows will hold up a lot better. That's all I'm saying. So, and I like saying that as Dave Chappelle. That's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is that the shows don't hold up. I like The Sopranos. It was great back in the day, but the shit doesn't hold up. But I'm going to give them a chance. Remember when Chappelle said that? See how everybody praises Chappelle as some... It's like the right center-right version of woke loves what Dave Chappelle is doing right now, I think. But I'm never going to forget that Dave Chappelle, Mr. Genius Comedy Truth Teller, got on Saturday Night Live and said, I'm going to give him a chance. Well, how'd that work out? And yeah, I know he was wrong. He admitted he was wrong. But guess who didn't give him a chance? The comedy genius you're listening to right now. I never gave that motherfucker a chance. Where's my fucking... So then they tried to buy my show and they didn't give me money. And I say, stop watching Chappelle's show. But don't blame... Whatever you do, don't blame my agent. Who signed the contract that fucked me? Oh, man. Anyway, guys, I don't know. What do we have to say about this week? You know, for everybody who ever spoke to me and told me that Trump supporters needed to be heard and that Trump was probably not a racist and was not as big a danger. And the thing we really needed to worry about was Ben Shapiro's speaking engagements at Berkeley. And I will say this, all the people on social media and in my life, whoever raise the Ben Shapiro questions or the what's really going on is that the PC left is out of control. These are the same people who I have never heard utter or seen write a word about Trump gassing protesters so he could get a photo op or trying to engineer a coup or inciting violence, a classic First Amendment speech violation. Classically unprotected speech in your Supreme Court jurisprudence. And it's just weird to never even hear, like, in other words, you get getting into these debates, it's always like very high minded. Like they think they're playing, political science chess with you when it's like, yeah, I don't think Trump is, I didn't vote for Trump. I don't think he's that great. I think he's doing some bad things. I don't think he's as bad as the left pretends. But what is your take? Then would you agree that silencing campus speech is probably long-term a bigger problem? And I'm going, I don't know. I feel like people storming the Capitol and threatening to hang the vice president to defend a guy who has routinely violated First Amendment assembly rights, that feels also like a big deal, if not an even bigger deal than colleges canceling Ben Shapiro and Milo Yiannopoulos. Call me a radical, but I feel like what Trump is doing is even worse than Berkeley canceling a speaker. But I could be crazy. I could be just a radical leftist socialist who, you know, just is lockstep with the left. it's always interesting and never surprising to see how many people will play that. I didn't vote for Trump, therefore everything I say has extra weight of neutrality. And it's like, yeah, neutrality, you know, I've said this before, neutrality on Trump to me is, oh, he is objectively an atrocious, horrible leader and person. That's objective. You know, nobody ever says childhood cancer. Why isn't anybody speaking up for the fact that it does some good things as well? No, you're just like, you'd be a monster if you started like taunting children with cancer and telling them. And to me, Trump is a walking, living, breathing virus on our democracy and on our discourse. Plain and simple. And now it's led to death. But admittedly, he didn't cancel anybody's speech at Berkeley. So, you know, we've got to keep in perspective, folks. Let's keep our eye on the ball on who's really the villain. But it's one of those things, like, it show people show themselves so easily now, because just like when Trump could have condemned the Charlottesville march and gotten political points just for doing, like, the basic human decency thing, he would have gotten so many points for that. He couldn't bring himself to do it because he kind of agreed with them, and most importantly, they were people who were supporting him. So that was it. The Charlottesville thing was like, that was it. Like, he couldn't even bring himself to earn the easy points. And it's the same thing with some of his, like, I don't know what term I should use for the people, like his non-critics, his non-critical critics, who are always like, wear the I didn't vote for Trump as a badge of honor, as if that's all it takes. Like, if you walk by somebody drowning and you go, well, I didn't push him in the lake, okay? You may not be under a legal duty to save that person, but it's like, you're not going to save that person. You're just going to kind of pat yourself on the back and say, well, I didn't push him in. But let's talk about how we're no longer allowed to bring snacks on the beach. That's the real enemy. Or as Dave Chappelle would say, that's the real enemy. So yeah, I just find it curious that I just, you know, once it becomes too big, then you'll hear a lot of folks go, well, I just don't want to talk about politics. But you definitely wanted to when Trump was a racist, vulgar, wannabe dictator. You definitely wanted to do some whataboutism with things that were 1/20th as significant or important. And, you know, I still look forward to seeing people telling me that, you know, the enemy we really need to be on the lookout for is the woke left. The woke left is annoying. I have no problem saying that. That's it. I have no problem. Like, just, I don't, yeah, there's things that are annoying. Annoying doesn't rise to the level of constitutional crisis or assault on democracy. And I don't, like, I don't see how it makes somebody, you know, I never can stand the people who sort of sit in the middle, you know, and claim that as like sort of a moral virtue. But it's like, you're dealing with shit that's like, well, the left says 2 + 2 = 4, but the right says 2 + 2 = 900. Well, I'm saying it's 10, and therefore, listen to me, because I have value here as an objective person who's not taking either side. And it's like, yeah, but 2 + 2 = 4. Anything else is wrong. You can be close to the right, but like, there's some things where there's right and wrong. There's not degrees. And it's always very telling to me when people don't even speak up at these times. This is the time when those whataboutism centrists who think of themselves as ideological heroes, this is the time when they start doing the I don't want to talk politics, because there's no there's no center to take. They can't occupy this Joe Manchin level of like, I'm not on either side. Look at me. Look at how principled I am. There is no both. There hasn't been a both sides to Trump. He's been horrible and awful, plain and simple. And I love it when it becomes like, I don't want to talk about politics now, because there's no there, because it's not fun. You can't be contrarian now. You can either be on the side of good or bad. There's no like middle ground on this. Like, even though Fox tries to take that middle ground, they try to pull that like, well, we really need to think about these people and what. What got them into the situation? Now, all of a sudden, Fox and OA, they want to talk about root causes of despair. When it's black people, all they fucking do is tell you personal responsibility. That's all they ever want to talk about. There is no societal racism. There is no institutional or structural racism. There is no, we've progressed, move on. Let's talk about what we can do. Let's look beyond race. Let's not, there's no, history is history. We got to live in the now. What good is that? No reparations, bop, 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 bop. But when it comes to white terrorists trying to overthrow the government in large numbers, let's not pretend like it was 10 dudes. Okay, that was pretty scary looking, I think. It was a teeming mob, as they would say. And you look at that, and you want to talk about root causes. You want to talk about like someone who's upset over Trump losing an election in a landslide, a fair election in a landslide. This is their slavery now. Like, they got to have 4 years of a racist in office. He got crushed at the ballot box. And they're so stupid and cruel and susceptible to blatant lies. Because they're not susceptible to it because they're just, oh, I'm unemployed and I'm just in despair. That might be a couple. But most of them are people who need their cruelty and their bigotry satiated through revolution and through fight. That's what it is. It's not. I don't believe these people are starting from a point of despair. Those people didn't look like they were claiming they wanted jobs and they wanted health care. These were people who were like, I'm upset that my guy lost. Therefore, I will hear any explanation for that, no matter how ridiculous or evil, and I'll buy it because I'm just unhappy. And being a sore loser is not the same as being oppressed or being systemically oppressed. And yet the equivalency on right-wing media, it's like, you know, they want to do this tap dance where they go, well, you know, we condemn the violence. We condemn it in the strongest of terms. But we have to look at, these are people who believed their votes were stolen, and we need to blame the people propagating the lie, except, of course, for Donald Trump, who bears no responsibility here. Hey, have we walked the tightrope there and maintained our cruel and evil base while also sounding like we give a shit about saying the right thing? Good. Okay, let's collect millions of dollars and sexually harass some women in the office. Good day. It's pathetic. It's fucking pathetic. And when it comes to, I don't know if I talked about this last week, but when it comes to the punishment that I believe the GOP must suffer for this, I'm not talking about criminal punishment. I'm talking about political punishment. I think I may have talked about this last week, and I apologize if I did. But basically, the exclusion, I don't think I did, actually. Maybe I didn't. I don't know. But the exclusionary rule in criminal justice law is basically the idea, there's a term called the fruit of the poisonous tree. And the jurisprudence around it basically stems from, if the police violate a law, like if they violate your rights, your Fourth Amendment rights, then that evidence has to be thrown out, even if it's legitimate evidence, even if it proves that you did the murder or the crime or whatever, it's got to be thrown out. And the idea there is that some things are bigger than just the individual case. If you allow law enforcement to trample on rights just to get their guy, then it's an inevitability that that trampling will steamroll into innocent people, as it already does. And so the idea is like, oh, you found the murder weapon, but you did an illegal search or you beat the confession out of somebody. Well, the murder weapon is no longer admissible because you obtained it through unlawful means. Now, there's the ways around that. There's certain ways if you could have gotten another way. But in other words, in a simple case, it's like, oh, well, now you don't have the murder weapon at trial. Like we had a hearing and you violated the Fourth Amendment. So now that the exclusionary rule, that evidence is thrown out. And to some people, they'd go, look at what the liberals or the judges are doing. But it's about preserving the system itself as bigger than any individual case. And I think the GOP needs some sort of exclusionary rule. And what I mean by that is right now, the Democrats have a 51-50 the thinnest possible margin in the Senate. Now, in 2022, I don't know what the breakdown is. I don't know what the, what races are up in 2022 if they favor Democrats or Republicans. But the idea that in less than 2 years, the Democrats could lose their majority in the Senate, and Mitch McConnell, who enabled this president for so long and stonewalled Democrats, the idea that they could be in power again after basically laying down till the very last minute of a coup feels so unjust and unprincipled and just unjust that to me, what I keep hoping would happen is that a few of these Republican senators, namely, and guys that like Ben Sasse, I'm no fan of. I think he's a cynical person who reached his limit with Trump earlier than others, but I still think he has played a very cynical brand of principled Republicanism. But Ben Sasse, Lisa Murkowski, Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, what I would wish that they would do is all change to independents and caucus with the Democrats. Not because, and I say that because the Democrats have the majority now anyway. And the four of them switching would not give a filibuster-proof majority to the Democrats, but what it would do is give breathing room to say, yes, in 2022, even if the Democrats lose two or three seats, we will not hand over the keys to power to the Republican Party so quickly again. That, in other words, there needs to be, like, this isn't law, but I'm just saying, if there really are principles in those people, a 54-46 majority with a vice president tiebreaker is feels more appropriate. It feels like there that's more of a safeguard to democracy, and that then the GOP will pay a price. There's a chance in 2022 the GOP takes the Senate and the House. Can you imagine what would we think in another country if after a coup is suppressed, if 21 months later or 22 months later there are elections and the people who helped engineer the coup take control of two of the three houses of government, not branches, that's the judiciary, which is firmly in conservative control for a long time. But it seems criminal that, like, in other words, this is almost like the GOP for supporting a Donald Trump coup. You get 2 years probation. It feels wholly unjust. So I keep hoping that some of the centrist Republicans would caucus as, maybe they can get Joe Manchin to identify as an independent as well, just to build up this, like, Democrat supporting independent wing, just as a safeguard that you say, okay, for this term, Collins, Murkowski, Sass, and Romney, I'm going to caucus as an independent within the Democratic Party. I'm probably not going to agree with them on most things, but I will ensure that they control the Senate for more than just 2 years. I wish that would happen. I don't think it will, obviously, but I feel like that's, you know, my idea is the exclusionary rule needs to apply a little bit to Republicans holding federal power. So that's basically the podcast for today. And now I need to get back to work, and then I need to watch a movie for my friend Chris Lambert's podcast, which I'm recording tomorrow. Before I leave, and I'm a little rusty, I wanted to watch Uncut Gems again, but as background, a popular segment, which I've already forgotten what I titled it. That's how long it's been. It's 2020 was 4 years long. But basically, I watched Uncut Gems in 2019, and I've always been told I look like Adam Sandler, and I developed a pretty good Adam Sandler impression, both not in Uncut Gems, but then in Uncut Gems, because he's doing like some weirder little accent. So I, as I moved to New Jersey, became sort of a fan of online gambling. I felt like I had a little casino that I could feed an addiction in my kitchen, in my New Jersey kitchen. So I started just regaling people with all my wins and losses. And obviously with Adam Sandler, you know, he was messing with Kevin Garnett in Uncut Gems. So, you know, basically the start of the impression would just be like, KJ, KJ, KJ. And I don't even know if I have it anymore. I'm going to have to work on it. I will share my gambling results, but I think I need to work on the Sandler again. Come here, KJ. Look at this is how I win. But the point is, I had like an Uncut Gem segment. And actually, the Righteous Girlfriend bought me some tinted shades and some magnetic earring studs. So that I, you know, I can't grow a goatee really, but I can get a fake one, or I can grow like a hint of one. But basically, if I add a video component to this podcast in the next couple of months, I think I may just do a gambling segment each week that I post, you know, along with the episode to YouTube. I may post like little gambling segments where I'm just a terrible gambler. Like you can call me like the degenerate Utah Jazz gambler. What was his name in the movie? Howard. I'm tired, folks. I'm always tired, but I'm just, my brain isn't working. So I've got to work on the impression again. So I will have to watch Uncut Gems in the next week or two. KJ, KJ, come here, KJ. Let me show you this, KJ. But basically, here's a list of my bets, and they are going poorly. So this is the fun part. Like, this will be my Uncut Gems as I just continue to spiral loss after loss. Placed a nice bet on Damian Lillard in the NBA for MVP, and no joke, first night, the Portland Trail Blazers are playing my Utah Jazz. Lillard goes out and throws up a zero in the first half. This is a guy who can go off for 50 just about any night. He ends up, I think, having like 9 points for the game. And I'm like, good MVP start, Dame Lillard. I mean, I'm glad my team won, but good God, couldn't you have dropped like 35 in the loss instead of 9 or whatever it was? Zero in the first half. 0 points for Damian Lillard. The JLJ, this is how I win. Then I was going to bet the Titans for the Super Bowl. And just the thought, folks, just the thought of betting the Titans, and they got their asses handed to them yesterday by the Ravens. So I didn't bet that. But that shows you the power of my betting skills. My first bet of the NBA season outside of awards bets, which I really just, all I did was bet the Utah Jazz to win the title. I put $500 down on the Jazz to win the title. That would collect $18,000. If I win, I feel like that's worth it because a season-long bet, as long as your team's competitive, a season-long bet always feels to me like just a subscription service instead of like one bet that I lose. It feels like a season-long $500. That's why I like season-long bets because you're kind of always in it until you're not. So you're always interested. There's always a chance. But that would be a nice payday, obviously. And you know, obviously, if I lose $500 that I bet in December. I'm not going to like sweat it too much by June or July or whenever the fuck the season ends. But that, of course, then I saw the Jazz lose back to back to the Nets without Kevin Durant. They got destroyed and then they lost to the New York Knicks back to back. So that obviously felt like the JL jinx coming in early to try and derail the Jazz season. But then when I was feeling despair, they went to Milwaukee and beat Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks. Pretty strongly and powerfully. so that felt good. So we're still in that. That bet's open. This is how I win. KG, come look. I got the Jazz, KG. I got the Jazz winning the title. What do you think about that, KG? And then I did, but this was the best. The two of the first three nights of the NBA season, I did a four-team parlay and a five-team parlay. The four-team parlay was over two nights. The Lakers lost to the Clippers. That was the first game of my parlay. So I was like, okay, well, that's a good sign when you don't even get to your third or fourth game in a parlay. And the other one of the five-team parlay, three of the five teams won, like what I needed them to do. So that was another loss. So right now I've probably already spent over a grand on DraftKings. Come on. I got to watch Uncut Gems again. I apologize. I'm going to really get into character for this, though. Once I start losing thousands of dollars, I think I'll really just start to turn into Howard Ratner. I think that was his name. Come here. Look at this. I bet a 19-team parlay, $12,000. Look, this is how I lose. And then today, I placed a bet because, as Tom Sizemore said in Heat, the action is the juice. And he was referring to bank robbery as like the thing that gets him out of bed in the morning. For me, it's anytime I see good odds, I don't care how stupid. I had $158 left in my DraftKings account, and this is how I lose. I put all $158 on Ohio State to win tonight. So that would pay out $537. And if I lose, it pays out exactly zero. They take the rest of my money. So if you're listening to this now, I'm going to be on my couch. KG, what do you think about the Buckeyes, KG? So we'll see. We'll see what happens. So tonight you can just watch Alabama destroy Ohio State and just laugh knowing that you're going to get, a little update from you're going to get a little bit of an update from Adam Sandler next week on the podcast, right? Okay, good. So I think that's it. I think that's all I have for you this week. Another busy week, just two jobs, no fun, total despair. But trying to think if there's anything else. But please get tickets to that Thursday show. Link in the show notes. Tell a friend if you got a friend if they couldn't get tickets to the first one or if you think they'd enjoy the show. Obviously, I prefer that people who get tickets to it enjoy stand-up comedy because then you're going to be in for a really great show. If you are expecting 60 minutes of Trump, I suggest you watch the 13 hours of Trump content that I put out in the last 9 months. I think that should cover you, probably. And if it doesn't, then I think you have a bigger problem than the media does in your obsession with Trump. So thank you guys for listening. Get those tickets. Hopefully I can sell out the third and final show. What else? I don't know. Check out Making Podcasts Great Again. Subscribe to my YouTube, blah, blah, blah. And I hope, I hope by the spring or summer I'll be able to start doing some live shows around the country. But I don't know. We got to see how this vaccine goes. I've registered for my vaccine. I'm sure I'll be getting it in like May or June at this rate, but hopefully sooner. And hopefully we don't have any more civil war attempts in the next week, but I'm thinking we might. So stay safe, stay healthy, and stay alive. I will find you. I'm just saying that because I watched Last of the Mohicans earlier this week, and it's that's a top 20 JL movie of all time. And, well, I guess we started with movie talk, and we can end with movie talk. So have a great week. Stay healthy. Stay safe. Get tickets to that show. Tell your friends. Pray for Ohio State to win if you listen to this before Monday night. Or don't. You don't have to. That's a strong waste of a prayer. Don't do that. I take that back. So bye, guys, and I will see you next Tuesday.